Good morning.
Morning, Sensei.
Hakuan, who was a very influential Zen master in the history of Japan, he revived Rinzai Zen. And this, I'm going to tell a little story. This story takes place way before he became famous and influential. He was a monk at a monastery, and adjacent to the monastery was a small town. And so the story is about Hakuin and this teenage girl who lived in the small town. And the teenage girl had a boyfriend. And over time, they got closer and closer. And over time, it became obvious that she had gotten pregnant. So her parents were furious at her, and they demanded to know, how did she get pregnant? And of course, all attention was on the boyfriend. But the teenage girl wanted to protect her boyfriend because his parents could be really horrible to him. So when the parents were asking him, how did you get pregnant? She said, Hakuin, a monk at the monastery, got me pregnant. So and then several months pass and she gives birth to the baby. And her parents take her and the baby to the monastery. And the mother holds up the baby and says, this is your child, and you will take care of him. And Hakuin says famously, is that so? So the parents leave the baby with Hakuin, and they go back to the village. And for the next 6 months, Hakuin, despite the displeasure that the other monks have with the fact that one of the monks is taking care of a baby, he takes very good care of this baby. And eventually the girl becomes more and more guilty and misses her baby. So she goes to her parents and she says, it's really my boyfriend who got me pregnant. It was not Hakuin. So the parents now are beside themselves that they could have done something like this. So they take her and they go back to the temple and they ask to see Hakuin. And Hakuin comes and the parents tell him, they say to him, our child has lied. And this is not your baby. It is her boyfriend. And Hakuin replies, is that so? And they take the baby and they leave. So my talk today is about equanimity. And I'm going to read a definition of equanimity by Jack Kornfield. And Jack says, equanimity is opening to the wholeness of life with composure and peace of mind, accepting the beautiful and the terrifying nature of all things. Equanimity embraces the loved and the unloved, the agreeable and the disagreeable, the pleasure and the pain, and it eliminates clinging and aversion. So I think what he is saying, that it's living in harmony with life, accepting all that life has to offer, and working with those ingredients to live a whole and loving life. Now, equanimity is not indifference. Hakuin was not indifferent to the circumstances. He entered into the circumstances wholeheartedly and took care of the child. So it's not indifference, but it is living in harmony with life. But it's not throwing up our hands and saying, oh, well, it's much more engaged than that. So there's a famous quote from Dogen that says, flowers fall in spite of our attachment, and weeds spring up in spite of our aversion. So what is it that makes it difficult to live with our life with equanimity? And it's the old answer. It's our mind. And if you remember, as Suzuki Roshi famously said, mind makes. So our relationship with our mind determines whether we can experience equanimity. So for example, pain is a natural part of being alive. But what we tell ourselves, what our mind says about the pain we're in, determines whether we suffer or not. Uh-oh. Okay. For example, life is not fair. I don't deserve this. It's always me. Okay. So those kinds of thoughts disturb our ability to be, and it interferes with our ability to live with equanimity. So there's a famous high wire artist who many of you probably know, Philippe Petit, who's a Frenchman. And he had walked from one tower to the other tower of the Notre Dame Cathedral. And amazingly, he walked from one of the Twin Towers to the other of the World Trade Center. Now, imagine what his relationship must be with his mind in order to be able to do that. So he has a thought that, oh my God, I forgot to take out the garbage this morning, right? So what would be his relationship with this thought? Would it be this or would it be that? What happens if he thinks, oh man, is this the day that I'm going to fall off? You know, once again, the mind creating trouble. And, you know, so it goes. Is the wire tight enough? So all of those doubts that are created by his mind have the potential to interfere with his equanimity. But because of all his experience and the way that he's trained his mind, he doesn't fall off because of these thoughts. So we could say that it does not throw him off balance. He stays in harmony with each step without being tossed around by thinking. So equanimity is a state of stability or composure arising from deep awareness and the acceptance of the ingredients of the present moment. And what we tell ourselves affects the outcome of our circumstances. If we have equanimity, we will not be tossed around by thoughts and emotions. So we could say, this is it. No matter how much the mind wishes it was otherwise, it's when we cling to how we want it to be and not accept that this is it, is that when the mind creates problem. Now, there's a psychological side to equanimity, and that has to do with the direct relationship between what we think and how we feel, between thoughts and feelings. And in the world of psychology, when someone is concerned about a strong emotion that they have or are experiencing, in therapy, there's a common question that is asked. And the question is, well, what was the thought just before you got angry, for example? So that question begins an exploration of how the thoughts we have play a major role in how we experience being in the world. It becomes crucial that we see how our thinking creates our reality and how our thinking can prevent us from experiencing equanimity. But it also shows us the connection, as I said, between thought and emotion. And these emotions reinforce the thought. We tell ourselves, what he just said to me is not fair. And then we have emotion of anger. And that anger reinforces the feelings that we're having about this. So feelings reinforce thoughts. They make the thoughts stronger and more likely to cling to. So if we have a person who, without any knowledge, thinks his neighbor dislikes him, he is in all likelihood to feel anger. And if he doesn't have equanimity, a thought and emotion followed immediately by a reaction occurs. And usually it's a fight or flight response. He has the thought, anger. But if we cultivate equanimity, we see that our mind is a thinking machine, manufacturing thought after thought after thought. We realize, though, that they are just thoughts, not the unquestioned truth. And if we have this kind of relationship with our minds, we will be more peaceful, more in harmony, and more clear about any set of circumstances that we encounter. And we will respond, we will not react. So the guy who cultivates equanimity has the thought that his neighbor dislikes him. However, he realizes that this is just a thought. And because he understands this, he is much less likely to feel angry, fearful, or aggressive. He is more likely to respond than react. He is more likely to be curious and seek to understand, why did I have this thought? Maybe the next time he sees his neighbor, he has a conversation with him. Maybe they go for a cup of coffee. And in doing so, the guy can either validate or invalidate his thinking. And the key to handling these circumstances is equanimity, being peaceful, at ease, seeing clearly. Now, here's the word. Being equanimous is a life's work. It must be developed, cultivated. Our practice helps us to do this. And you all know that from the beginning of our practice, we are taught to work with thinking. No, the basic instruction is to notice the thought and let it go. And we do this over and over, thousands of times. And for some of us who have been in this practice for years and years, decades, we probably let go of thoughts millions of times. And if we get attached to a thought, we are taught to calmly let it go and go back to thinking, right? And this is our training. This is how we are taught to relate to thinking, to not accept thinking as the absolute truth, but it's just a thought. And we have the ability to just say, it's just a thought, and let it go and go back to our breath. Now, Suzuki Roshi has, for me, a wonderful metaphor to describe this. He talks about a thought approaching your front door. But before you answer, you open the back door. Then you invite the thought in. You bow to the thought. You don't entertain it. You just let it go through and pass out the back door. So not only does Zazen help us not get attached to our thoughts, but over time helps still the mind and the body. And these physiological changes that come out of meditation allow us to be less reactive and more responsive. Now, it's not just Zazen, this kind of training, that can help us change our relationship with our thoughts. But it's my belief that any spiritual practice, the ground of which is to let go of our attachment to ourselves so that we don't take ourselves too seriously and we feel more connected to anything. Those kind of practices also allow us to have a different kind of relationship with our thinking and the way that we see the world. Now, Viktor Frankl, who was a famous Austrian neurologist and Holocaust survivor, pointed out that between stimulus and response, there is a space. And in that space lies our power to choose our response. And this space is what I would call the field of equanimity. The field of equanimity becomes expanded as we practice Zazen. So the space may be like this between and that, but it gets wider. So there's more of a delay between when something happens and we react to it. And as the space becomes more and more and we develop this equanimity, it no longer is a reaction, it is a response to the stimulus. So as we become more peaceful and less reactive, our heart naturally begins to open and to feel more connected to everyone and everything. Now, to point out the fact that chronic reactivity, always being reactive to everything, creates separation. It puts us in opposition to others, in opposition to life in general. So this lack of equanimity can create problems in our everyday life because it establishes a particular relationship that we have with our life. So there are other factors that disturb our ability to live with equanimity. Now, this is also a very rich and deep field, but in the interest of time, I'm not going to go into it, but I will just give a general idea of what I'm talking about. One example would be our lifestyle, the foods we eat, the stimulants we use, the stress we face daily, the lack of exercise, our relationship with our family and our life, the amount of rest we get, our overall health, and so on. These disturb our physiological balance, our ability to be at peace, to be at one. So this is a whole other area that interferes with our ability to have equanimity and also need to be worked with just like we do through Zazen. And of course, Zazen will help us do that work as well. Now, Zazen helps immensely because it helps us be balanced, and it also helps us to see clearly. And if we see clearly what's happening, we might be much less likely to be involved in the fight or flight response because we're seeing clearly. We weren't instantaneously reactive. Pema Chodron teaches that, quote, things don't really get resolved. They come together and they fall apart. Then they come together again and they fall apart again. Unquote. So what we tell ourselves about the way things are determines whether we can live peacefully with equanimity in this world of impermanence. Many of us, including myself, eventually encounter some circumstance in which we would like things to stay the same. Right? And we hold on to that idea. No, I don't want this. I don't want this to happen. And equanimity is seeing that that's life and that it's impossible to resist life and to have equanimity. So she goes on to say, quote, healing comes from letting there be room for all of this to happen, room for grief, for relief, for misery, for joy, unquote. So to me, this room is the space between stimulus and response. It is being at peace with the changes that life presents. It's equanimity. So finally, Chodron says, to be fully alive, to be fully human and completely awake is to be continually thrown out of the nest. To live fully is to always be in no man's land, to experience each moment as completely new and completely fresh. And grounded in equanimity that our practice creates. These things happen, but we move through in a balanced way, accepting them, the changes, and working with them. I'm going to end with a short poem from The Leaves of Grass by Walt Whitman. I exist as I am. That is enough. If no other in the world be aware, I sit content. And if each and all be aware, I sit content. One world is aware, and by far the largest to me, and that is myself. And whether I come to my own today, or in 10,000 or 10 million years, I can cheerfully take it now, or with equal cheerfulness, I can wait. Is that so? Thank you.